the verses of the Sri Ishopanishad. First of all, just with the translations, okay? Altogether. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of God, it is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or an anxiety for him? Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of God, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Only one who can learn the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all I've done in the past, translation, O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all I've done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so there'll be no hindrance to my progress. So we're going to hear from the invocation to the Sri Ishopanishad on page number 13. The translation is, the personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The complete whole, or the supreme absolute truth, is the complete personality of Godhead. Realization of impersonal Brahman, or of Paramatma, the Supersoul, is incomplete realization of the absolute complete. The supreme personality of Godhead is Sat-Chit-Ananda-Vigraha. Realization of impersonal Brahman is realization of his Sat feature, or his aspect of eternity. And Paramatma realization is realization of his Sat and Chit features, his aspects of eternity and knowledge. But realization of the personality of God, it is realization of all the transcendental features, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, bliss. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects of the Absolute Truth and their completeness. Vigraha means form. Thus the complete whole is not formless. If he were formless, or if he were less than his creation in any other way, he could not be complete. The complete whole must contain everything both within and beyond our experience. Otherwise, he cannot be complete. The complete whole, the personality of God, it has immense potencies, all of which are as complete as he is. Thus, this phenomenal world is also complete in itself. The 24 elements of which this material universe is a temporary manifestation are arranged to produce everything necessary for the maintenance and sustenance of this universe. No other unit in the universe need make an extraneous effort to try to maintain the universe. The universe functions on its own time scale, which is fixed by the energy of the complete whole. And when that schedule is completed, this temporary manifestation will be annihilated by the complete arrangement of the complete whole. All facilities are given to the small complete units, namely the living beings, to enable them to realize the complete whole. All forms of incompleteness are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. The human form of life is a complete manifestation of the consciousness of the living being and is obtained after evolving through 8,400,000 species of life in the cycle of birth and death. If in this human life of full consciousness the living entity does not realize his completeness in relation to the complete whole, he loses the chance to realize his completeness and is again put into the evolutionary cycle by the law of material nature. Because we do not know that there is a complete arrangement in nature for our maintenance, we make efforts to utilize the resources of nature to create a so-called complete life of sense enjoyment. Because the living entity cannot enjoy the life of the senses without being dovetailed with a complete whole, the misleading life of sense enjoyment is illusion. The hand of a body is a complete unit only as long as it is attached to the complete body. When the hand is severed from the body, it may appear like a hand, but it actually has none of the potencies of a hand. Similarly, living beings are part and parcel of the complete whole, and if they are severed from the complete whole, the illusory representation of completeness cannot fully satisfy them. The completeness of human life can be realized only when one engages in the service of the complete whole. All services in this world, whether social, political, communal, international, or even interplanetary, will remain incomplete until they are dovetailed with the complete whole. When everything is dovetailed with the complete whole, the attached parts and parcels also become complete in themselves. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Ishopanishad. And this invocation verse is very famous, actually. It's a verse which gives an immediate indication that the absolute truth is personal and that everything that exists is an emanation from that supreme person. If there were things in creation that were more complete than their origin, that would be a little illogical, that there are persons who have consciousness and senses who emanate from a source that is either senseless or impersonal. Also, it doesn't make sense. So this verse comes right out and says it, that the Supreme Personality of God is the Supreme Person, and that all emanations from him are his parts and parcels. And this is the goal of the Vedas, actually. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matak smitir jnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarver ahame vivedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Ultimately, Krishna is the compiler of the Vedas. He's the knower of the Vedas. And the Vedas are specifically meant for realizing him. And Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yomam eva masamhudo janati purushottamam sasarvabid bhajatimam sarvabhavena bharata, that one who knows that I am the Supreme Person, it becomes the knower of everything, because he knows the source of everything. So, Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachite. It's reassuring also to know that the personality of God is perfect and perfectly complete. Because in material consciousness, there's a sense of scarcity that I'm aware of the fact that this body is temporary and is going to pass away, and that resources are scarce. Actually, in economics, the study of economics, the first aphorism or understanding is that there are scarce resources. And that's why there's a law of supply and demand, because people are trading resources that are scarce. But in this verse, it's pointed out that actually, and there are no scarcity of resources because they're all coming from an unlimited source, ultimately. And in the Bhagavad Gita, we learn that because we are also emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have the same quality as the Lord. Not same in quantity, but the same in quality. And the quality of Krishna is that he's eternal. So we're also eternal. There is no termination for the soul. Very interestingly, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that any experience of incompleteness we have in this world is due to incomplete knowledge of the complete. Some have some endeavor to know Krishna. Well, people endeavor to know him and know him partially. Everyone knows Krishna in some way. In fact, the Vedas talk about how there are various stages of consciousness for living entities. Living entities are eternally conscious, so they exist in different stages of consciousness. First stage is annamoy, which means consciousness of food and the need to eat. When I was just flying back from Toronto, it was a 5-hour flight, and I could see there was they had this movie going, and it was of Yellowstone Park. That's in Wyoming, I think. And it's a natural park. It's a wild preserve where there are also all kinds of animals. So they had this incredible photography of all the animals that were there. And there were bears and beavers and ants and all kinds of birds. And they were just showing how all of them basically lived to eat. they were moving around. And they all had a unique way of eating. Like there were these otters, and they'd go and catch the fish, and then they'd eat the fish, and then the fish were eating somebody else. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Ahastani sahastanam aparani chatushparam falguni tatramahatam jivo jivasya jivanam, that one living being is food for another in this world. Annamoy, the definition, it means the consciousness of food. Actually, that's Krishna. He's the sustainer. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovititati kaman. He's the one who's supplying everything. It's apparent by watching that nature film too, that there's a perfect balance within nature. Everyone has some food in the food chain that's being supplied. These big grizzly bears, they weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds, gigantic. And yet they can climb up on these rocks and eat these moths that live up there. They eat thousands of them a day in order to maintain their body weight. And then, of course, there's the hummingbirds, and they drink the nectar from the flowers when they come out, and so on and so on, Annamoy. And then there's another stage higher, which is Pranamoy, and then Gyanamoy, Vijnanamoy, and Anandamoy. And all of these are different stages of consciousness for the eternal living being, especially those who have become detached from consciousness of the Supreme Person. Itam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vrajaharu kritapunya punjaha. In the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shukadev Goswami says that various kinds of people see the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to their own position. So, first of all, he said that there are those who see that the Supreme is Brahman, impersonal energy or light. Itam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya. They experience some happiness by identifying themselves with Brahman. They feel that God is this energy of light. And then there are those that are aware that there is a personal form to the Lord, but they worship him in Vaikuntha with great awe and reverence. There's an awareness that he's the supreme personality of Godhead, Narayan, controller of everything. And then there are those, mayashritanam naradarakena, who just think of the Supreme as an ordinary person because they're affected by the external energy. Naham prakashya sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudhoyam nabijananti lokumam ajamavyam. Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that when someone's covered over by the external energy, they can't see him. They can't understand that he's the Supreme Person. Therefore, they just think of him as an ordinary person. Do you know that verse? 7th chapter? You're learning the 7th chapter, so I wondered. Naham prakashya sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. So that's one state of vision. They just think God's an ordinary person. And then, sakam vrajaharu kritapunya punjaha. Then there are those who live in Goloka Vrindavan. And they actually associate with the Supreme Person as a friend. And these are the most fortunate of souls who have attained heaps and heaps of pious activity, of pious credit. So there are various ways of seeing the Lord. He's the origin of everything. He is everything. Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sadurlabha. In fact, Krishna says, bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sadurlabha. That after many, many births and deaths, someone who's actually in knowledge comes to realize that Vasudev, Krishna, is everything. He exists everywhere, is within everything. And all emanations, including the material energy, come from him. Sa mahatma sudulabha, Krishna says, such a great soul is very rare, somebody who knows this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to say that the Supreme is like a mountain, and people from different angles of vision and different distances from the mountain observe that Supreme differently, different angles of vision. So, Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vishishite. The personality of God, it is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, even though so many complete emanations come from him, he remains the complete balance. And also we see that those the emanations that come from him are complete in themselves. Like, we're emanations from Krishna. And our body is a complete unit provided by nature. It comes custom made for us. There's a functionality in this body which is amazing, actually. It's a complete unit. There's homeostasis, maintains a particular temperature. And everywhere within nature, there's a cycle, there's a perfection within it for regeneration and balance with other elements in nature. I was just talking to someone today, and they said they met a scientist who was inventing a way to grow trees in the desert, because he figured out a way that by condensation the trees could grow. And in such ways, through modern science, damming rivers and doing all kinds of things, there's been a real fiddling with nature sort of has made a lot of problems. We call unintended consequences. Like in the Sacramento area, when I was up there last month, I met with a devotee named Aja. And Aja is a civil engineer, and he is in charge of the 5 dams that are in the Sacramento area. And he was telling me that one of the main problems with dams is that it kills all the fish. Because and that his main job is to keep the fish alive. He has to let go enough water so that there's water in the rivers so the fish can spawn and live and things like that. But pretty much all over the world, rivers are dammed up so that there can be a hydroelectric power, and it's a source of water and things like that. But then the unintended consequences to the environment set off a chain reaction, and there are many difficulties. Not the least of which is mentioned these days, of the Earth is heating up due to all kinds of emissions created from carbon fuels that are covering the atmosphere. So Aja was telling me, too, in California, a lot of our water comes from the snowpack in the mountains. It's such a perfect system that, you know, when it rains here, then it snows in the mountains, and then the snow packs down into these huge sheets of frozen water. And then over the summertime, all those melt off, and the water's plentiful for everyone down here. But now, he said, because the Earth's temperature is rising, the snowpack doesn't last, and it's not as dense as it used to be. So even though it rains and rains, even if it rains more, and it does rain more because there's more evaporation, but its snow doesn't hold it anymore like it did. So all the water just runs off to the river. So it can rain and rain and rain, but then there's not enough water. Consequence of modern civilization. Prabhupada used to point out that there's a perfect arrangement within nature. If you just have an acre of land and a cow and some seeds you can grow, then you can be self-sufficient, actually, and not have to go anywhere. Chanakya Pandit said it's the greatest opulence to not have to go outside your own home to make your livelihood. But nowadays, practically everyone has to do that. And you just have some seeds, and you do a little work, but, you know, everything comes naturally, and you stay healthy, you know, working on the land and things like that. Who provided all that? This is all coming from Krishna. That's a complete arrangement within nature so that people can live a balanced, healthy life. Everything's supplied. And through sacrifice, yajna, offering it back to Krishna, then everyone can be happy. And at the end, go back to Godhead. That's the purpose of the human form of life. So this knowledge is lacking. People have forgotten what their source is. And there's all kinds of incomplete knowledge of the complete. And because of having incomplete knowledge of the complete, there is an incomplete lifestyle. There are incomplete feelings within many people's hearts, not feeling satisfied. This is a far-reaching problem. Everywhere we go, we find that people aren't very happy or satisfied because of an artificial standard of living, and mostly because of not being connected with their source. They don't know where they came from, and they don't know how to make themselves feel complete, and therefore they take to all kinds of activities like, intoxication. And then there's lots of medication to try to make you feel more complete, but that's just a temporary measure. So knowing our source and knowing how complete the source is very reassuring. And in devotional service, the more we're able to channel our energy back to the Supreme Source, who's fully complete, the more we'll feel complete in ourselves. I was just back visiting Acharya Chandra Prabhu's room back there. He's the pujari. He and his wife take care of the deities here. And, of course, Gadai is always here as well at the temple. And they have a very simple facility there. But it's very nice because they live and work just to satisfy Krishna. And I was remembering while I was in their place of residence back there that when you have some service, when you're close to the devotees, and you can sit and take prasadam together and have friends, what else do you need? A place to lie down and sleep, right? That's it. Simple. And after that, you feel satisfied within the heart. Otherwise, you can have a big house, you can have cars, you can have money and everything like that, but then you have to commute to work. Our friend Aishwarya used to comment, because he would go door to door in some of these very wealthy neighborhoods, and he would say that there are these $10 million homes, and the only person inside was the dog who was enjoying it. He'd be looking out the window along the San Francisco coast. In San Francisco, they have these really expensive homes, and he just noticed that the dog was the one looking at the views, and everyone else was out working to come home and pay for the rent and everything like that. Artificial standard of living. But on the other hand, you know, great sages and saints and simple devotees who have learned the art of devotional service can become happy wherever they are by engaging in devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj pointed this out in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, that just as if when you decorate your face and then you look in the mirror, the reflection is also decorated. So he used this analogy to say that we're Krishna's parts and parcels. So when we serve him, then we also feel satisfied. In fact, that's the only way we feel satisfied. When we serve Krishna and we provide him, we put our attention into pleasing him, then we'll feel pleased. And the opposite is true. If we divert our attention from Krishna and we see things separately from Krishna or try to keep things for ourselves, it's compared to the fingers and the hand trying to enjoy food independently of the stomach. What is the duty of the hands? They take the food and they feed it to the mouth. It goes to the stomach, and then the hands become nourished, and they've done their job, and they feel happy. So one time, actually, the hands went on strike. All the senses complained, thinking that we're working so hard and the stomach is simply enjoying. Therefore, you know, we don't like the terms, so we're not going to serve anymore. So they stopped shopping, they stopped cooking, they stopped eating and feeding the mouth, and the stomach didn't get fed. But after a few days, they felt very weak, and they reconvened, and they talked it over and decided to start feeding the stomach again. And when they did it immediately, their health came back. So similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam points this out. Bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktir anyatra traisha trika eka kala prapadyamanasya yatasnata sus tusti pushti shud apayonagasam. That when one gives everything to Krishna, then it's just like a person who eats food giving to the stomach. That person feels nourishment, satisfaction, and the hunger goes away. So similarly, Bhagavatam says, one who serves Krishna gets this satisfaction feeling bhakti, which is love. It's actually love. It's a reciprocation that takes place between the living entity and the Supreme. And I would argue that that is the main occupation of living entities everywhere anyway, is that they're trying to enjoy some relationship. Say a businessman here in Silicon Valley works very hard. What's the ultimate purpose? so that he can maintain a house and have a family and have a relationship, because that's what makes him happy ultimately. It's the rasa, or the exchange, that's there. But that's a temporary, it's a temporary rasa, because whatever family I have now will change when I leave this body and when they leave their bodies. But our rasa with Krishna is eternal. And once revived, it's never broken. So the science of Krishna consciousness means to revive our relationship, our rasa with Krishna. And when we do that, then we're fully satisfied at every minute, actually. And amazingly, Krishna's right there. In the Sri Upanishad, a few verses after this, comes the statement, tadajati tannaijati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya sibayataha. It says that the Supreme Lord is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He's far away, but he's very near as well. He's within the heart. He's within our hearts, actually. And by deciding primarily that we're going to follow his will, then we become satisfied. I'll read you a verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says how important it is to get the instruction from him. I'll read you a couple verses, actually. First one is on page number 459, and it's the 10th chapter, 10th verse. And let's see if you have the same book. 10th chapter, 10th verse, starting on page 459. And if you don't, just turn to text 1010. Yeah, are you there? Same? Yeah. We're in business. Okay, here's the verse. Tesham satata yukdanam. Would you like to repeat? Bhajatam priti purvakam. Tadami bhuti yogam tang. The translation is, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he had spoken to him of many things, and that he would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Now buddhi yoga is explained. Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness and devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga, or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain him. So here Krishna is saying that he's providing intelligence from within the heart of the devotee, how he can approach him. And this is a very intimate relationship between the soul and Krishna, that as soon as a soul has the inclination to know about Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, then Krishna provides him with intelligence how to do that. And he also makes all kinds of arrangements to do that too. So it's a very intimate relationship between the devotee and the soul. When the soul has the volition and the free will to turn towards Krishna, and when he does, then Krishna gives all kinds of facility because he's simply waiting for the soul to take initiative to turn towards him. And as soon as he does, Krishna gives intelligence how he can come and how he can approach and how he can increase his service. He makes all kinds of arrangements in that way. So that's one verse, which is very important in understanding how Krishna is directing the soul. And another one is in the 18th chapter. And look on page 742. And these texts are 57 and 58. 57. All say, please repeat. Chetasa sarvakarmani. Mai sanyasya matparaha. Buddhi yogam upashritya. Machita satatam pava. Translation, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Purport, when one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. Hare Krishna. Jai. The Sanskrit word matpara is very important in this verse. Which Sanskrit word is very important in this verse? It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. What does matpara mean? No goal in life except for serving Krishna. Matpara. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. Quote, I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Page number 743 we're on. And so this verse and purport are very satisfying, actually, because by becoming matpara, one acts in one's constitutional position. Actually, our constitutional position is that we're eternal servants of Krishna. And this is a very exalted position, to be a servant of Krishna. And it's also very satisfactory, to be beyond being satisfactory. One of Krishna's names is Atita Vansha. Atita Vansha means that, do you know that name?
What is it?
Atita Vansha.
Atita Vansha, I just don't remember hearing that
That's from the Krishna Lila Stava by Rupa Goswami. He wrote a, by Sanatana Goswami. He wrote 108 verses which glorify the pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's called Krishna Lila Stava. And in the beginning of that book, Krishna Lila Stava, which is available, we have this book, anyone can read it. He invokes the name of Krishna, Atita Vancha. So Vancha means desire, and Atita means beyond or above. So Krishna is the one who fulfills our desires above and beyond what we could have even imagined. We can't even imagine how much he'll fulfill our desire. In fact, Prabhupada used to say that his father would tell him that when Krishna takes away from you, he takes with 10 hands. And when he gives, he also gives with 10 hands. Can't imagine how much Krishna gives us when we become matpara. And when we're not matpara, Krishna mercifully, actually, yasyaham anagrinnami harishet tadtanam shanai. He may take away things from us for our own good, because a child who's playing with matches or something, you know, some poison, and the parents take it away, the child may cry and say, oh no, give me the matches back, I need those. And he's like, you don't really need them. So when we're in the material world and maintaining material desires, when I'm doing that, I'm harming myself. And Krishna, when he sees that we're sincere and we've begun the process of devotional service, and we may have these attachments, he'll mercifully take them away. When someone is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he then gives with 10 hands. Really what he gives is more and more facility to serve him. He gives more and more facility than anyone can even imagine. And that's the great ecstasy for the devotee, to have unlimited service, to serve Krishna, and the intelligence to do it. And that all comes from Krishna as well. So in these verses, Krishna is giving us the formula for success. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Before I went to Toronto, I was talking to a friend of mine, Mahatma Prabhu, who puts on seminars. And I was giving some talks and seminars in Toronto. And so I was just consulting with him about a few things, arranging for the seminar. And just in the conversation, it came up. He was talking about a person. He had read a book of a man who had said that one of his most potent techniques in life was to end the day on his knees praying and to wake up on his knees praying. That was his technique. So going to right before going to sleep, getting on his knees and praying, and then waking up in the same thing, first thing, you know, starting and finishing like that. And this is the simple method for advancing in devotional service, is praying to Krishna, because he's right there, he can hear us, and when our prayers are sincere and we're asking for guidance, he's saying right here in Bhagavad Gita, I'm there to guide you. He'll give intelligence, buddhi, exactly how to do that, just as he gives everyone intelligence. Someone wants to have intelligence about how to make a proprietary seed so that they have from these big companies like Monsanto, they make these seeds that only they can use. They're patented. And they come up with all kinds of ideas for how to mix the genes within the seeds, so they come out like these super plants and stuff. And who knows what other kinds of intelligence people are getting for all kinds of things all over the world. That's all coming from Krishna. So naturally, he will give supreme intelligence of how to approach him and how to engage in devotional service if that's my desire. I mean, if I want to make a super seed and he gives me the intelligence for that, why won't he give me intelligence directly how to serve him, right? And then Srila Prabhupada mentions here about the importance of connecting with the disciplic succession, because Krishna has said, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha. To know the truth, one should approach another who has it, who's, you know, achieved this pitch of devotional service through the process of devotional service, through serving their spiritual master. And one can have the direct guidance of Krishna indirectly through this connection. I'll read you something about that. The direct-indirect connection. Indirect-direct. This you'll find on page number 758, text number 75 in the 18th chapter. I'll say, please repeat. Vyasa prasada chuttavan.
Vyasa prasada chuttavan.
Etad kuyam aham param.
Etad kuyam aham param.
Yogam yogeshwarat krishnat.
Yogam yogeshwarat krishnat.
Sakshat katayata swayam.
Sakshat katayata swayam.
Translation, by the mercy of Vyas, who's speaking?
Sanjaya.
Who's he speaking to? Thank you, Virendra Kumar Prabhu. So, Sanjaya is speaking to the blind Dhritarashtra because Sanjaya has a transcendental television going within his heart. He can actually see, he was given a benediction by his spiritual master Vyas, that he would be able to see all the events on the battlefield of Kukshetra. And therefore, he's sitting off the battlefield, but he's reporting everything that's happening. He can see it through divine vision. This is the dialogue that's taking place here. By the mercy of Vyas, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who is speaking personally to Arjuna. Purport. Vyas was the spiritual master of Sanjaya, and Sanjaya admits that it was by Vyas's mercy that he could understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that one has to understand Krishna not directly, but through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent medium, although it is true that the experience is still direct. Interesting, isn't it? So therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Avadhuta Brahman that is met by Maharaj Yadu, the Avadhuta Brahman is wandering in the wilderness, and he's a self-realized soul. So Maharaj Yadu asked him, how did you become self-realized? Who's your guru? He said, I have 24 gurus. And he named them all. And one of them, Shiksha Gurus, one of them was water. He observed that water was transparent. You could look at it and it would magnify what was on the other side. So he compared that to a spiritual teacher, that the teacher illuminates the spiritual knowledge for us. He doesn't obscure it, but we can see through him and understand what the spiritual knowledge actually is. So I'll read this again. This means that one has to understand Krishna not directly, but through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent medium, although it is true that the experience is still direct. This is the mystery of the disciplic succession. When the spiritual master is bona fide, then one can hear Bhagavad Gita directly, as Arjuna heard it. There are many mystics and yogis all over the world, but Krishna is the master of all yoga systems. Krishna's instruction is explicitly stated in Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto Krishna. What is Krishna's instruction explicitly stated in Bhagavad Gita?
Surrender.
Simple, right? Just surrender unto Krishna. Surrendering to Krishna is the only duty of the soul. That's our only business in this world, is to surrender unto Krishna. Everything else entangles us further in complexities and karma, which are very difficult to get out of. So therefore, Krishna says, Daiva hi eshum gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, this material energy, is very difficult to get free from. But one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. And it's a great relief, sweet surrender, to surrender to Krishna. So that's our only business. And it's the only business of those who are spiritual teachers to teach others to surrender unto Krishna. And then, of course, how to surrender Krishna, that's a big topic. I mean, that's why we have an institution. We have this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. What is the purpose of that? So people can come and surrender to Krishna. So precisely what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Sharanagati that there's a process, there's a path of surrender. And it involves... One, accepting things which are favorable for executing devotional service to Krishna. Name one thing that's favorable for executing service to Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna is extremely favorable. It's so favorable that even if someone does it without knowing what it is, they get the benefit of advancing in devotional service. Aruni Mataji. Remember Krishna and never forget him. So chanting Hare Krishna and remembering Krishna and not forgetting him are very favorable for devotional service. You had something, Gadai? What's favorable for devotional service?
To offer something to him?
To offer your food to Krishna. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhaktya paritam ashnami pariyatatmanaha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I'll accept it. There's immediate reciprocation when something's offered to Krishna in love. Very favorable. The next is to reject things which are unfavorable to serving Krishna. Name one thing that's unfavorable. This side of the room. What's one thing that's unfavorable for service to Krishna?
Cheating.
Cheating. Yeah. That could be very unfavorable. The greatest of all cheating is what? According to the Bhagavad Gita. What's the greatest of all cheating? Yes?
Money.
Oh, well, okay. I'll take that. But in specifically in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, gambling.
Oh, okay.
Krishna says of cheating, I'm gambling. People get cheated all the time. In fact, I took an economics class once and the professor said that in economic terms, gambling or the lottery is known to be a tax on the stupid. Because actually the state gets all this revenue from doing the lottery, but actually it's nearly impossible to win. The odds are, so far against it. But people get addicted to, things like that. So it's a tax on the stupid. And cheating. What else is one thing unfavorable for devotional service? What about the four regulative principles? Come on, that's an easy one. What are they? What do we call in ISKCON the four regulative principles? Meat eating is very unfavorable to devotional service. Intoxication, extremely unfavorable. We're already intoxicated in this world. And then when you put deliberate on intoxication, the intoxication is from the false ego, thinking I'm this body. And it's a kind of cheating process also. We become cheated because we're trying to enjoy a dead lump of matter, and we're being cheated. And the false ego also cheats us because then we believe that I'm the center of attention, I'm the enjoyer, and we missed the sweet taste of actually being a servant of Krishna. Then if you take intoxication of any kind, then you're it's layered even more. So it's very unfavorable for intoxication. What's another thing that's unfavorable? Yes? Illicit sex. It's the whole project of the Vedas, Prabhupada once said, the whole Varnashram was ultimately to free people from sex desire. And described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yanmai tunayati grimedi sukham hitucham, kandudyanena karayori vatuka dukham, tripyanti neha, bahuna, dukha bhajaha. Kanduti van manasidam visha heta diraha. That the Prahlad Maharaj says that the source of all kinds of entanglement and suffering in this world is sex. And pumsa striya maituna bhavamitam tayo mitu hridaya grantamahu ato griya kshetra shutapta vitara janasyo moho yamaha mameti. The entanglement principle is the attraction between male and female. And when the male and female come together, the pumsa and striya come together, then there's the byproduct, which is offspring, and then you have to get a field to work in so you can maintain the whole thing. And then you have to work hard. This is what it describes. And then you become more and more entangled in the material world. So that's why we have these samskars, like the marriage samskar. Because then it's regulated. All the samskars are meant to regulate all the natural propensities that we have in this life. The most driving force, which is sex, that therefore there's a marriage ceremony, so it's regulated. So it's regulated. Why? If it's regulated, then you can gradually get out of it later on. You can become free from that. But illicit sex, that there's no regulation, and it completely bewilders the intelligence, and then one becomes lost in the material world. So very unfavorable for devotional service. And we already actually, incidentally, mentioned the fourth regulative principle, which was gambling. So we covered them all. That's pretty good for being, we have some favorable things and we unfavorable things. And then other processes of surrender. So the first two in the process of surrender are to accept things which are favorable and add them to our life, and to reject things which are unfavorable and somehow expunge them from our life or replace them with, you know, the Krishna conscious alternative. What's the Krishna conscious alternative to gambling? I ask you. And there is an answer. And it's a good one. The Krishna conscious alternative to gambling, Prabhupada said, is surrendering to Krishna. It keeps you thrilled at every minute because, you know, when you surrender to Krishna, actually, you know, in my material mind, I'm calculating how I'm going to arrange my life. Material life is a series of calculations and adjustments to try to become happy in this world, right? And they don't work. When I surrender to Krishna, and it's like sometimes at these, they go to these seminar. People have seminars where people will go and they'll walk on fire as a way to like become more confident in life. They have coals, hot coals, and then you can walk across them. It doesn't burn your feet, but it's very scary. And you have to walk across in a certain way, but people do it, and then they walk across it, and they feel like they conquered a fear. Or sometimes they have these exercises where they'll have a partner, and you'll stand there, and then you fall backwards without looking, and then the partner has to catch you. And then, you know, it builds trust and things like that, but it's scary. It seems risky. So, yes?
I have a question about the gambling.
Yes?
You just around the symbol of the dharma, everything he knows, everybody is right, wrong. Why he gambled?
Who?
Dharma.
You just hear?
Why he gambled? He is a symbol of the dharma. Everything, he knows everything. Why he
well,
he
shut... Kshatriyas is part of their dharma to gamble. It's part of their actual activity. They have a slightly different kind of recreation than others do. And when they're challenged to a game, like gambling, then they're supposed to take it up. It kind of maintains their nature of fighters and you know, being involved like that. No, he can't. That's my point. Like for Kshatriya, there are certain kinds of activities that when they're challenged to a duel, or actually mentioned in the Mahabharata, if a woman approaches a Kshatriya and says, you know, please marry me, he's duty-bound. He has to marry her right there. They have a different kind of marriage ceremony, and there are different set of rules for Kshatriyas. Yeah. Yeah. Different kind of thing. So I was saying that... do you remember what I was saying? Huh? Oh, yeah. When you surrender to Krishna, then it seems like a gamble. Because you let go of your own false ego that I'm going to control everything. You say, okay, Krishna is going to maintain me and protect me now. It's the ultimate gamble. But it's the ultimate payoff, too. So, you know, gamblers are always looking for the ultimate payoff. They have all these signs all the way up to Sacramento because now there's gambling casinos even in California everywhere. It used to be only Nevada you could have them. But, you know, that people it'll say, you know, the ultimate payoff, and everyone's just like, you know, doing the slot machines and playing this to get the ultimate payoff. But this is the ultimate gamble and the ultimate payoff. Please. Microphones.
I was just going to attest to that, surrendering to Krishna is an alternative to gambling, because now after going through so much of, you know, studying and being constantly reminded that you should surrender to Krishna, I have started doing that in my life. That, I mean, by nature and by habit, I'm very controlling and I try to organize everything, and to the extent that even the result has to happen the way I'm planning it. And so sometimes I'm stuck with, like, there is no possible way that this can happen. And that's when I will surrender to Krishna. And at that time, I will think, like, you know, now let me wait and see what wonderful way in which he's going to solve the same problem that I could not have thought of. And that kind of gives you a kick.
It does.
Almost similar to gambling.
It does, and it never ends.
It never ends,
because there's always more to surrender. And it goes on forever. Deepak, do you mind sitting up close, please? I just say, you know, the closer you sit, the more benefit I get. What an exciting thing. And the thing is, you can't know until you actually surrender. See, that's the thing. And it means sincerely surrender from within your heart. You know, and Krishna knows that too. Prabhupada used to say, he knows, he doesn't see as much how much you give as how much you keep back. Because someone may have, he may have so many things and give them to Krishna, but he knows he's keeping the best for himself. Or he's, you know, whatever it is, he's holding it back. So Krishna notices that. So it's a gamble, you know, to give away to Krishna. And then, and surrender and let him. In fact, there's a bumper sticker. I think it comes from the AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, says, let go, let God. Let go, let God. And when we do that, we actually discover our relationship with Krishna. It's not done capriciously, but it's done through knowledge and understanding. As it's mentioned here, one has the benefit of a bona fide spiritual master. One has the benefit of Shastra, means the scriptures are there, like Bhagavad Gita, to tell us what is the correct thing to do in life. And there's sadhus also. There are those who are surrendering, who are ahead of us. And we can see what is the result. They surrendered, they're getting strength. They're becoming blissful. They're not in any lack or want. They're actually happy. So Krishna gives us all these ways to actually monitor how effective devotional service is and surrender. Hari Bol! So nice to see all the Vaishnavas. Hare Krishna. So we should surrender. This is a good thing to do, is to surrender. Rakshit Prabhu.
No, I was to say that when a person surrenders, a person may be trying to get certain things done in the material world, not happening, and he surrenders, that he may find that the way Krishna responds is entirely different from what his expectations are.
Mm.
That he may surrender and he may have a trace amount of hope that the difficulties that he's facing in the material world, whatever, he may overcome. But he may find that Krishna has an entirely different path or a solution for him.
And Gandharvika Mataji was shaking her head when you said that, so let's hear what she has on her mind.
I was thinking more in the lines of Prabhuji, because you said once we surrender, it becomes blissful. But because of material attachments, it becomes most painful. Because we feel so miserable that the way Krishna treats us with some of the attachments. So though gambling people do enjoy and all that, but the process of surrendering seems to be like a way full of thorns. So it's really painful. So why is that? That, as Prabhuji said, Krishna has a different thing.
Partly it's because there are tests along the way, and it's not cheap. It's not a plaything, actually. It's a big deal. And, you know, if it was cheap and easy, anybody would do it. But part of the reason that, it seems difficult and in the beginning, it may seem like there's a, you know, oh, what did I do? You did what? You surrendered to Krishna? You know, that's really to keep out the insincere people. It takes a great amount of sincerity to actually go through the process of surrender, step by step.
Because sometimes we feel like we are all alone.
Uh-huh.
Because even sometimes our relationships may fall apart, or even family close.
That's true. I mean, you make a good point. It's darkest before the dawn. You know that saying. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the same thing. He says that it's darkest before the dawn. And there may be times when, you know, when we're finding our way and we're surrendering, and it seems very scary. That's why I said it's a gamble. It seems like the ultimate gamble, because, you know, you're like, come on, Krishna, you know, come on now, you know. And then, you know, there are a series of events, but you can see around you. You can take, you can take shelter and hope. The mind is so powerful, you know, that it wants to run back and continually take a shelter in the material world. You know, it keeps saying, you know, yes, but, you know, at least you'll, you know, so what if you're going to die? At least you'll be happy, you know, for a few years, you know. You know, don't you want the house in Malibu? I mean, you know, you're not going to give it up for this, are you? You know, but ultimately, the supreme reward and taste is there. It is, yeah.
In regarding being alone, I just wanted to point out that the grass seems greener on the other side. And so it's also good to sometimes talk to other devotees. And I just wanted to ask you that in the Nectar of Instruction, where it says you should talk to others confidentially and inquire confidentially, does it mean sharing these kind of things as well?
Yes, it does. And it's one of the most important aspects of devotional service is to have intimate friendships with like-minded devotees. In fact, this is one of the angas of bhakti, is to have association with advanced devotees and that are like-minded. And we should do so regularly. We should have a way that we're opening our minds and hearts to devotees. You know, if there's something bothering you, for instance, you should have a devotee or, you know, a series of devotees that you can call and talk to, or you can invite over to your house and say, hey, this is what's happening, you know. Let's talk about it, you know, and work it out. Yes, Usha Mataji. Microphone. Volkswagen with its lights on. Uh-oh. So, yes, that's very important, and we should be resourceful and find that kind of association so we can work these things out. Because oftentimes, you know, things come to us in ways that are difficult to untangle for ourselves. So guhyam akyati prichati means this kind of sharing secret things within our heart. And it doesn't just mean problems also. It means realizations. I mean, Krishna says this is the preoccupation of devotees, actually, that machita makata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantashchamam nityam tushanti charamanti cha. They get their satisfaction from this, from speaking to one another about Krishna and their realizations about Krishna. In one place, Prabhupada says that advanced devotees get together and discuss Krishna Katha just the way professors do, and talk about their subject matter. You know, you can imagine, my dad was a professor. He had the prerequisite corduroy jacket with little patches on this, and he used to smoke a pipe when I was a kid. He gave it up later, but, you know, there's a whole profile. Professors sit, and then they'll, you know, it's like, oh, Jameson, what do you think? You know? Yes, I've noted this, and what do you think? You know, and back and forth it goes, and they churn it. You know, they're deeply into the subject matter, and that's their life. And devotees are like that too. In the best of circumstances, like I expose myself to this fully every year. I mean, of course, we do this here. That's what we're doing now. When I go to Govardhan, we sit down in a room. We're in one room. That's, about a quarter size of this, and then the devotees just pack in. There's a lot of very advanced devotees with a lot of experience in devotional service, and we read and then we discuss threadbare for hours, and so many things back forth. The discussion gets so sometimes it can get intense, and from that environment, that's where, you know, we untangle all the things that are you know, holding us back, you know. The faith becomes fully available. And this is from association with devotees. In fact, you know, Krishna says that I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm not in the heart of the yogis. Where am I? I'm where my devotees are glorifying me together. This is a very potent combination, this guhyam akyati prichati. And also, you know, you need to have friends in Krishna consciousness. It's absolutely necessary to have friends, intimate friends, that you can talk to and discuss things from different angles of seeing. And it gives you the possibility of freeing your mind and your heart, you know, from any kind of misgivings and sorting things out and getting encouragement even. It's really necessary to have encouragement in devotional service. Because sometimes it's hard for us to see. Yes, Vanamali, pass her the microphone, please.
So I was just thinking that one thing that I feel when I feel any sense of loneliness is I feel like the need to surrender even more to Krishna, because then that I feel that the more I surrender to Krishna, perhaps, you know, the less or the more that feeling will go away, the more like closer to Krishna I will feel, the more the loneliness will go away. And you were talking about in friendships with devotees, and I was thinking that, I'm sorry, this is a little bit long after the fact, but the friendships with devotees, I was feeling like if anyone doesn't have enough, maybe pious credits accumulated, or, you know, and they're always praying to come to the platform of friendship with the devotees more, you know, then how can anyone be more hopeful for that, I guess?
That's a question?
I guess if a person is feeling loneliness and they do want that association with the devotees and that friendship with the devotees, and they're not feeling that that's, you know, because they're still in the process of giving up whatever is unfavorable, and, you know, it's perhaps there's some relationships they're trying to say goodbye to, or, you know, and they're trying to bring what is favorable. And then they're hoping for that devotee, always hoping to become qualified for that devotee association and friendship. Then what more hope could they have? Is there, like, I can't just go up to any devotee and say, please be friends with me.
Why not?
Oh, well. Okay.
You never know. I mean, devotees are very accommodating. We say, Vancha Kalpatrubhischa Krupas Nabeyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Vaishnavas are all accommodating. And they're like desire trees. They actually fulfill the desires of everyone. Hare Krishna. So, you know, we can go up to them and ask them, you know, can I be your friend? And they will accommodate because they're very merciful. And so, you know, we should do that. Of course, you know, there, as Malini has been teaching us recently, there's etiquette, there's generations, and there's ways to approach different kinds of devotees, as mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction. I was just having this conversation in Toronto because there's this new devotee. She's very, I would say, vivacious. She's about, I don't know, 4.5 feet tall, and really energetic, and like she just joined recently. But she'd come up to people and say, hey, dude, how you doing? Like after the kirtan, she came, dude, that was really good. And some of the devotees were like cringing because they were like, sorry, she doesn't know the etiquette here yet, you know. But her heart is in the right place. But anyway, there's ways in which in any culture, of course, we relate to different kinds of people. And Rupa Goswami points that out in the Nectar of Instruction. But the point is that... yes, Vaishnavas are all accommodating, and they're full of compassion. And you know, if we go and we ask them, "Can I be your friend? You know, will you be my friend?" Of course, they'll say yes. If they're real Vaishnavas, they will, huh? Well, even more so then. Krishna is a kinchana gochara. It means that he specifically, you know, takes care of those who feel they have no qualification. And devotees are just like that also. You know, they'll take in people. I mean, that is the qualification. That is a qualification, though, to feel like that, to feel I have no qualification. We have Sunny and then Acharya.
Prabhuji, in terms of surrendering to the Krishna, I am struggling with that process. So the surrendering is to giving up all this worldly engagement. Is that the way? Means the another way, just backing off from all this, you know, the all this involvement in the material world, or you are staying in a such a, you know, who you are as an established thing, and then surrender to the Krishna. I mean, so I was wondering, because the reason I'm asking, there is a limiting yourself in the world, the material life, the worldly life, or you are using all this material advancement, such as the inventions and electronic things and everything, and then you are, you know, seeking with the possibilities more and more from this material development. So my concern is, as a, you know, a sadhu, become simply backing off everything, or you are staying this worldly life and use this the age of that development, material development.
Well, Rupa Goswami talks about renunciation. He says, "Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upunyunjita nirbande Krishna sambande Krishna vairagnyam uchite." That renunciation means to engage everything in Krishna's service. And if there is something that's engageable in his service and you don't use it, then this is false renunciation. And Falgu Vairagya also means that there's a river called the Falgu River. It appears to be dry because the water runs just underneath. And if you push your hand into the sand just underneath, you'll find that it's wet. So those who renounce worldly things, but then, you know, they maintain some attachment within their heart, this is called Falgu Vairagya, or false renunciation. Everything can be engaged in Krishna's service. There's a way to engage things in Krishna's service properly. So it's not an exercise of just distancing ourselves from so-called material things, but learning through proper instruction from the scripture, from the spiritual master, from the instruction of sadhus, you know, how to move in the world and use everything in Krishna's service. We can use airplanes. You know, it's just a matter of consciousness. You know, some people are in an airplane and they're going to make a profit for themselves. And other people are on an airplane and they're going to spread Krishna consciousness. They're both using an airplane. For one, it's a transcendental experience. For the other person, it's a binding experience. In battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna did not tell Arjuna to walk away. He told him to fight the battle. And he had to use all the paraphernalia of war in that battle. But because it was for Krishna, therefore it was transcendental. So you must learn the art of using everything in Krishna's service. And then it becomes transcendentalized. And the point is, it's not for you. If you work for a company that makes $1 billion, and $1 billion passes through your hands, you just pass it on. You're the clerk. You don't keep that $1 billion. And if you work in a company that makes $5, you still pass the $5 on. It doesn't matter how much it's making. The material volume isn't as important as your consciousness and how you're using it. So, stani stita shruti gatam tanuvan manobir. You can stay in your position and hear properly and align yourself properly. And if you get some service, this is very important. It's a wedge. When you get some direct service to Krishna, when you're properly aligned and you take that service, then that becomes a lifeline, and it also will expand, and that will become all-consuming in your life also. Artificially, if we just try to drop things, we won't be successful. But we must take the positive side and engage everything in Krishna's service that we have now, and pray for service, take some service, and that service will expand also. And Krishna will make many kinds of arrangements. And of course, we have to take them when he gives them to us also. He'll give us association, he'll give us circumstances and more service, and it's up to us to take it more and more too. But it's a gradual process to do that, not artificial. I mean, you got here in a car, right? We're glad you came. I mean, if you said, I'm not going to ride in cars, I'm going to walk, so I can't come, we'd be very disappointed. And you wouldn't get to come to class. So is using a car, in this case, you know, is it renunciation? Yes, it is, because you're using it for a proper purpose. It's yukta vairagya. Yukta means it's connected to Krishna, and that's the whole point. If somebody in front of you in line drops a $100 bill, and you see the $100 lying on the ground, you have three choices. You can pick it up keep for yourself. That's stealing. You can leave it on the ground. That's, you know, incomplete because the person didn't get it back. Nobody gets it. The wrong person will pick it up. But if you pick it up and hand it back to the person, then you've done the right thing. You'll feel satisfaction. An exponential satisfaction you can't even imagine because you did the right thing. You gave something back. So giving everything to Krishna makes us unlimitedly happy. We're connected. We're in the flow. We're doing the right thing. That's bhakti. So connect everything to Krishna properly, and you'll feel satisfied. And you'll be a renunciate. You know, whatever you're using, it's not your car. Acharya was next, and then Virginia Kumar.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting back to the old topic. But I'm still doing it because I think it's a very, very important topic about friends we were talking here. And I wanted to tell this, that there have been researches done by some respectful devotees. They've been talking to people who left Krishna consciousness, many of them. And believe it or not, but like 99% of them told that the reason why they left Krishna consciousness was they didn't find any friends. And I was thinking that this is our time, it's so short, and we don't have it. You need to invest some time to have some friends. And I wanted to tell that Krishna consciousness give us this time, because if we are following the process, so at least 2 hours we have to chant japa. And if you want to chant, you can chant with somebody else, and That already friendship. Especially if you may spend another 5 minutes to tell about your realization after chanting japa. Chant books, right, and discuss. That's also, if we are serious devotees, we're following this Krishna consciousness process, we got to read the books and we got to discuss these books. And for that you need friends. Otherwise, how would, with whom you would discuss it, right? And without discussion, that might be never become something real for you. And another thing, it's like we've been saying here that we are spending a lot of time commuting here in car. So it's also a way to have association with someone, commuting together in one car and talking, discussing things. That's what I was thinking, that I must share some practical ideas which I've got, this and importance of friendship and Krishna consciousness.
Thank you very much, Acharya. Nice point. Virgendra Kumar, Prabhu.
Regarding the surrender point, I was with a group of devotees, and one Mataji, she told a very nice realization that she had. She said that she had this great attachment for diamonds, purchasing diamonds and having diamonds. So she collected a lot of diamonds and diamond necklaces. So she was after all this, you know, jewelry. But then when she came to Krishna consciousness, she started using the same diamonds to decorate her deity Krishna. And she said that after some time, I lost attraction for myself for diamonds, but now I'm looking more to see that, you know, I'm buying diamonds so that, you know, Krishna looks beautiful. So she said my attachment for diamonds have gone, but the attachment to, you know, to see Krishna beautiful in the diamonds with the ornaments, that has increased.
Very nice.
So yeah. Surrendering So here, here she surrendered that attachment in a way that, you know, in the service of the Lord, and then she lost the attachment for material enjoyment, for her own personal enjoyment. So that is the surrender. That is called Yukta Vairagya.
Very nice example. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. Engaging in Krishna's service, the concomitant result of that is knowledge and detachment from the world. And I really like that example because it's something we can all relate to. Everything can be engaged in Krishna's service. And it's just like family members can be a source of attachment. In fact, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 14th chapter, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj that all our family members and all our paraphernalia in our household, he said, it's like foot shackles. It's holding us. We can't move anywhere. Unless everything is engaged in Krishna's service. When the family members become devotees and everyone's engaging in Krishna's service, then it becomes the source of our freedom, actually. So being actually in devotional service, being a householder is not a disqualification. If you're on the Gyan Marg, it is. You have to give up your family and you have to sleep on the floor and you have to eat gruel once a day. Bhakti is so powerful that one can live as a grihastha. It's a grihastha ashram. You can be a renunciate in the grihastha ashram. You can be a renunciate if you're a king. Our example of Ambarish Maharaj is that he's a great king, but he engaged all of his wealth, everything in Krishna's service. All of his activities were meant to serve Krishna. His palaces were all arranged so that Krishna was glorified. And he's glorified as one of the great Vaishnavas. How he engaged everything, all of his senses, all the time. He had facility to do so also. The most palatable dishes. Bring in all the best cooks. Who are we cooking for, you or Krishna? If it's you, you're going to hell. You're eating sin, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. If it's for Krishna, you're making progress. You're going back to Godhead. You had a point, Gandharvika, and then Srivas? Okay, Srivas, go ahead.
If they could still eat, but if they offer it to Krishna, they're actually after Krishna eats it, they eat it, right?
And then it's called
offering.
And then the food's called
prasadam.
Nice, we like that. That's a very good point. Thank you very much. Excellent point.
Lots of points came up on that loneliness, Proji. The one that I actually meant was like, as far as surrender is concerned, there is the individuality. Like you have so many devotees around you, everybody can help you. But like that bird going after the lead bird, it has to flap its wings. So that process of that, the change has to happen within a person. And that change and the suffering for the karma, others cannot do it for you. So that process is what is painful for an individual. And that individual has to undergo, and nobody else can take it. So when one is undergoing that process, how can one be steady and be confident that, yes, Krishna will help me? So because sometimes the reactions can be very, very heavy. And if we are not having that much power, we may not be able to withstand the reactions.
Well, yet Brahma Sakshat Kritanishchiyapi Vinashama Yati Vinana Bhogai Apaitinama Spuranina Tate. Rupa Goswami says, Karmeti Viroti, that even our prarabdha karma is destroyed by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And even in the preliminary stages of chanting a Nama Bas, one attains liberation. But, you know, when one directly sees Krishna through his name, then even the prarabdha karma is destroyed. But even in the beginning stages of advancement in devotional service, or chanting Hare Krishna, then one comes to the liberated stage. And there's all kinds of encouragement that comes along. As we were reading in the verse, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, that's part of the theme of the class of how much encouragement it comes from Krishna from within and without. That, you know, he makes all kinds of arrangements for us. And that even in our lonely times or our suffering times, there, you know, he makes facility to make us feel safe and come closer. Those who are surrendering, you know, within the surrender process, there may be, you know, peaks and valleys and things, but Krishna's always there to take care of us. And we should experience that as we're going forward. This is called realization. You know, that's evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogasa bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sanga sajayate. That there's an actual, you know, vigyan, there's a realization of these things for oneself, that we actually experience it directly. It's pratyaksha, that we feel that how Krishna is. You have to have that. It has to be there. It has to be some realization. Krishna allows devotees to move along and make that kind of advancement.
You always mention that the attitude matters a lot, because even in Krishna consciousness we get so many devotees, but if we are not willing to be forgiving and if we don't have all those qualities, we cannot sustain in a good relationship for a long period of time. So ultimately the attitude with which we take everything, I think it helps us to go through the pain, considering what you said.
Your attitude determines your altitude. Definitely. Sandhya Mataji. And then Deepak.
And I just wanted to add that also thinking that when you're going through something bad, always thinking that because of the karmas from our past, we were actually entitled to even a worse situation, but mm-hmm. because of our devotional services, actually we are getting less. That helps a lot in handling these difficult situations.
That's true. Yeah, nice point.
One realization which I was going through last week was, you know, this surrender and the service part. So what I was thinking was what the love, the definition of love, what we are calling. And I was looking also at one of the videos from Mahatattva Prabhu, and it again was coming up. Like the love which we are calling probably is actually contaminated. It's not the actual love. Love means actually service. So, you know, when a parents are actually selflessly feeding kids, actually the service which a mother does to the kid is the love. The service which a devotee does to the Lord is the love. So the definition of love, which, you know, we in this material, you know, situations have, is actually not true. The true definition of love is selfless service and surrender. So I just thought, since we are talking about surrender, and the things will come, you know, we should have faith.
Yeah, it's more potent when it's selfless, that's for sure. We noticed this on Sankirtan. I just had an experience when I was in Toronto. We went out door-to-door on Saturday, and boy, it was the rainiest day you could have imagined. And it was so windy. But the devotees went out anyway. It made it even sweeter, actually. I could see from my room upstairs that the rain was going sideways and the trees were going like this, you know. And so everyone went out, and we went to, I'll tell you some of the details, it's kind of fun. One party went downtown to have a Harinam Sankirtan. Bhakti Marg Swami took that party, and they stood under an awning, so they were fairly dry. And I didn't see them till later, because I took a party to this high-rise, well, it's an 11-story apartment building. There's no non-security buildings there. I looked, but I figured out a way to get in. it was totally super soul. It was this arrangement. So we had 9 devotees, and we got into this place, and we were standing in the lobby, and they're saying, "Okay, what are we going to do? Because we can't go back outside. It was raining." So I looked up and down. They had the names of the people along the side there, and I said, "Find me a Vietnamese name." So I found a Vietnamese name. I just recognized, you know, the Vietnamese name. So I said, push the button. Because first I was looking for Chinese. I couldn't see any Chinese. So there's a Vietnamese name. Push the button. So the intercom comes on. I said, Chang Manjoy. It's just in Vietnamese. Just says, you know, hello, how are you? and bzzz, the door opened. I mean, because who else is going to be downstairs that's going to speak something in Vietnamese? It was like magic, you know. It was just like, Chong Mun Joy, and it all was like, what'd you say, you know? So we went to the top floor. We started on the top floor, and this was a low-end kind of apartment. I'm really talking low-end. I don't know if anybody cleans the place. And a lot of people smoked in there, not just cigarettes. So there was like all kinds of smoke everywhere. But the people were the salt of the earth. It was amazing. So we went to the very top floor. And the first place, I knocked on the door, and this Chinese girl opened the door. And I could see in the back she was taking care of elderly parents. And as soon as she opened the door a crack, I could see a picture of the Buddha over on the side. So she was, Chinese. And so we started talking to her. Maybe she was Vietnamese. I can't remember. But in any case, I got the book in there. And she said, okay, I'll be right back. And it took her a while to come back. Some of the devotees say, she's not coming back. I said, no, she's coming back. So finally she comes back. She opens the door. And I look back. She had $5 Canadian she gave me. It was a paperback Gita I had put through the door. And I looked back there, and her father, I'm sure he didn't speak English, just from the scene I could tell, but he was flipping through the Bhagavad Gita. It was just such a far-out sight, you know? But anyway, I could tell this girl was effulgent, you know? She was so happy to see us, 9 devotees at her door, you know, in this crummy little apartment. And so about a half hour later, we were 3 floors down, and she came searching for us and gave another $20. So, well, that wasn't the story I was going to tell. The other story was, I met this guy from Czechoslovakia, and he didn't have a shirt on. He was in the middle of something, you know, but I kept harassing him like I usually do. And, you know, just give a penny or whatever, you know, take the book. You got to do, say Hare Krishna. He just wanted to put his shirt on and close the door. And, or close the door and put his shirt on. So, anyway, I kept pressing. But finally, you know, he went for the go get a penny thing, and he gave a little change for the book, and you know he was like apologetic or something, but we were really nice to him, and he came back. He was saying, I'm so sorry, this is not enough or whatever, and you should take the book back. And we said, no, keep the book. We're not here for the money. You know, we really wanted you to have it. We wanted you to be happy and all this kind of stuff. And it was an honor to meet you. And we left, and then he came running after us later too, with the big bill. And wanted to give a donation. And I was just seeing how living entities react to this, you know, respect. And also when they're given freedom to actually make the choice, then oftentimes, you know, especially if they're pious, then they make the right choice. And when it happens, when somebody has free will, when you don't have any expectation for them, when you're there for their goodwill and you're actually trying to give them something and not take anything, there's no residue of taking, then there's something that's so profound that happens. I would say it is the most profound thing. And that's what happens between us and Krishna. When we actually go through the process of cleansing our heart and we take out all the grains of sand and elements that have anything to do with I'm keeping it for myself. Krishna says, Durena Hyavaram Karma. That kind of grain, get rid of it. It's poison. It is poison. Get it as far away as possible. And that's the surrender process. When I'm looking for those things and taking them out of my heart, then there's such a reciprocation from Krishna. It can't even be measured. It's a direct relationship with Krishna, actually. From within the heart, he reciprocates with those who are consciously trying to remove those things. And one way we can do it is actually to pray. Because if we, for instance, if we beg the holy name, you know how to beg? Have you ever been to India? I've seen beggars, and I know how they do it. I've seen it. They are so, like, determined. Nilesh Prabhu, we've been missing you. Hare Krishna, good to see you. I've met beggars before who have followed me for a mile. And they do this whole thing, like they train the kids, you know, to like try to touch your feet and pull on your dhoti and, you know, all this stuff. Babu, Baba, Baba, Babu, Babu, Babu. You know, like, and after a mile, you know, finally, I see most people just like, you know, it's like, okay, here you go. You know, no, you know. And so if you ask, if you beg, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in his bhajan, in that Jeev Jago bhajan at the very end, he says, I've begged for the holy name and I've received it. He said, now beg for it. So when we chant, we really have to beg. And remember what it means to beg. Get on your knees and just beg for it. You know, please could I have it? 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 Please give it to me. You have to ask for it, you know, and beg over and over again. Become a beggar. And Krishna's fulfilling everyone's desires anyway, so he'll give it to us. He actually will, if we keep asking. And what if we don't, you know, if we're begging and we just ask for, you know, give me one good quality. Krishna, please give me one quality, just one, or one particle of one good quality. And we beg for that. Prabhupada wrote in one letter, that's the same as having the quality. It's the same. If you can muster the desire that I want one good quality, Krishna, please give it to me, and you chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's the same as developing the quality, actually. It comes that, like, directly because of our desire. It's based on our desire, and there's a reciprocation from Krishna. Shivats.
As you told that when you chant, you're begging. Like, when you chant, you're begging, like, to go to Godhead.
Is that how you chant?
Not sure.
Yeah, we're begging, that's for sure. So, anyway, tonight we talked a little bit about... We started with the verse Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam, and we talked about how Krishna is perfectly complete. He's the one we should surrender to. There's no lack in Krishna. He's the source of everything. And when we repose our energy, our consciousness, our love in him, then we're fully satisfied in an instant by that activity. Then we talked about how Krishna is there within the heart. We read the verse Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Puti Yogam Tam Yenamam Upiyantite. This priti, this love, this is what we want. It's that reciprocation with Krishna, and it comes from our conscious surrender through the surrender process of actually deciding I'm going to surrender. We also talked about what the surrender process is, that and we discussed giving up things which are unfavorable and accepting things favorable, giving up things which are unfavorable. And we gave some examples. And we also talked about this interesting point Prabhupada made about there are replacements for the four sinful activities. One of them is gambling. So I was asking the question, what is the replacement for gambling? And Prabhupada said it was surrender to Krishna. Yeah, that's a good one, right? So, you know, there's that. And then we read later on in the 18th chapter where Krishna says, be fully conscious of me in everything that you do. And he says there that I'll guide you. And then we were talking, and Prabhupada had mentioned how having a spiritual master in disciplic succession is actually, it's indirect, but you have direct access to Krishna through that. It's kind of the miracle. That's actually where we were in the middle of this purport. Getting restless? Is it too warm? It's too warm. You want to turn on the fan? Is it too warm in here?
Yeah.
It's a little bit on the toasty side, isn't it? All right, I'm just going to finish this purport for the sake of completeness, and then I have a special announcement. We have the arrival of a new book that devotees asked for last time. Okay, here's the purport that we were on, so I'm going to finish the purport, and then I'll show the books. The verse is text number 75 in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And again, the verse is, by the mercy of Vyasa, I've heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who is speaking personally to Arjuna. Gadai, who is the master of all mysticism? And who is he personally speaking to?
Arjuna.
Thank you. Purport. Vyasa was the spiritual master of Sanjaya, and Sanjaya admits that it was by Vyasa's mercy that he could understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that one has to understand Krishna not directly, but through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent medium, although it is true that the experience is still direct. This is the mystery of the disciplic succession. When the spiritual master is bona fide, then one can hear Bhagavad Gita directly, as Arjuna heard it. There are many mystics and yogis all over the world, but Krishna is the master of all yoga systems. Krishna's instruction is explicitly stated in Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto Krishna. What's the explicit instruction of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? One who does so is the topmost yogi. This is confirmed in the last verse of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the last verse in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Exactly like that. We have a pundit in the audience here. He's been hiding for a long time. Our pundit has been sitting in the back hiding from us. Narada is the direct disciple of Krishna and the spiritual master of Vyas. Therefore, Vyas is as bona fide as Arjuna because he comes in the disciplic succession. And Sanjaya is the direct disciple of Vyas. Therefore, by the grace of Vyas, Sanjaya's senses were purified and he could see and hear Krishna directly. One who directly hears Krishna can understand this confidential knowledge. If one does not come to the disciplic succession, he cannot hear Krishna. Therefore, his knowledge is always imperfect, at least as far as understanding Bhagavad Gita is concerned. In Bhagavad Gita, all the yoga systems, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga are explained. Krishna is the master of all such mysticism. It is to be understood, however, that as Arjuna was fortunate enough to understand Krishna directly, so by the grace of Vyas, Sanjaya was also able to hear Krishna directly. Actually, there is no difference between hearing directly from Krishna and hearing directly from Krishna via a bona fide spiritual master like Vyas. The spiritual master is the representative of Vyasadeva also. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, on the birthday of the spiritual master, the disciples conduct the ceremony called Vyasa Puja. So the whole point led us in this direction because we're talking about how Krishna is available. He's there within the heart. And he's directing us, and if we become conscious of him, he gives us facility from within and from without to directly perceive him. It's a direct experience for the devotee. So this is the devotional process can be practiced by anyone, anywhere who's sincere. Prabhupada mentioned that in the Tesham Satata Yuktanam verse, that Krishna is helping directly from the Bhagavad Gita also. He can speak to us directly from the pages of the Bhagavad Gita and give us direction, and from the spiritual master, and from within the heart. And generally, we triangulate. It means that we take Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to understand how to move forward in devotional service, because there are a lot of difficult situations in life and decisions to make, so we have to order those. Yes? You have a question, okay?
I missed the part when you mentioned that the four regulative principles the don'ts is replaced by the four. So mm-hmm. I was wondering.
I didn't mention them all. I just mentioned gambling.
Okay.
So the replacement was surrendering to Krishna.
Okay. And I just wanted to add a little point. I was just thinking that Guru Maharaj was mentioning in one of the lectures that the most important thing about service to Krishna is the purpose behind it. So I was just trying to remember when Deepak Prabhu mentioned about, anything that we do to Krishna as a service, the purpose is the most important. The example that Maharaj was giving there was about, it was in South India Yatra where he's saying that Shailapurna's disciple Govinda is actually trying to make up the bed for his Guru Maharaj. And then after every night when he makes the bed, he actually sleeps on the bed and then he lets his Guru Maharaj sleep. But then actually, according to the etiquette, a disciple is not supposed to sleep on where his Guru Maharaj is supposed to sleep. But then he tells his Guru Maharaj that, I want to make sure that there are no thorns or anything that will prick you. So it's okay for me to go to hell, but I want you to have a nice sleep. So Maharaj was mentioning that the purpose behind doing things are the most important things than doing it.
It's a nice point.
Thank you.
There's another example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant, Govinda, had come to massage Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after he took prasadam. But Mahaprabhu had, when he lay down, it was across the doorway. So Govinda was asking him, you know, can you please move so I can come in and give you a massage? And Mahaprabhu said, you can do it or don't do it, but I can't move, I'm too tired. And he fell asleep. So then Govinda took his chatter, put it over Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and stepped over his transcendental body. And then gave him a massage. And it was time for him to go take prasadam, but he didn't go. So when Mahaprabhu woke up, he saw Govinda was still sitting there, which is a much later time when he should have been there. And he said, what are you still doing here? And he said, I came to give you a massage. And he said, so you gave him a massage, so why didn't you leave? And then he would have had to step over his body. So Mahaprabhu said, Govinda said, I would have to step over you. You're blocking the doorway. And Mahaprabhu said, but you got in. And Govinda didn't answer out of humility, but he was the obvious implication was that, and he was thinking, Kaviraj Goswami tells us his thought process, that was, to serve you, I'll step over your body. But to serve myself, I will not step over. I will not step over. So this is, you know, the purpose in the stepping over is the same thing, but if you have that idea in mind that you're serving, then, you know, you can go one way but not the other. That's the devotional mentality. Shiva?
In the verse that you said in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna leads you, is it the when Krishna leads you to Vaikuntha? Is it the path?
When he leads you to is it to Vaikuntha? Well, I think you're right. Hare Krishna. So last week, by the way, tomorrow we'll continue our reading of Ramayana, Ramayana Marathon.